Hey guys, a note before the episode today. On Thursday evening, that's November 2nd, Sam Bankman-Fried was found guilty of all charges. So that's all seven counts that he was charged for. Now, we've recorded this roll-up episode before the verdict dropped. David's in Europe. He's likely asleep, so we haven't had a chance to talk about this. But I'm pretty sure I speak for him when I say, it feels so good to end this painful chapter in crypto. 1 year and 5 days ago, we hosted SBF on this very podcast on a debate with Eric Voorhees on crypto regulation, and it was an absolutely legendary debate. We arranged it after we heard from some friends that SBF was up to mischief in DC. Apparently, they said he was greasing the pockets of lawmakers and working with them on a crypto bill that would make DeFi front ends virtually illegal. And effectively, this would be pulling up the ladder for decentralized finance and accruing more power for his exchange, for FTX, and doing all of this under the auspice of practicality. I remember the debate well, and at times it felt like SBF was almost giving us a lecture. We crypto natives didn't understand how to work with governments. Our values weren't practical. They couldn't win. They were too rigid. Here was a billionaire wonder kid who built one of the world's top exchanges in less than 4 years. And what did we know about building business and getting things done in DC? This is the tone of the conversation. Equally, I remember Eric Voorhees with eviscerating arguments and monkish precision. He argued to Sam that crypto is an open, permissionless financial system for the world. It's like the internet. It's like email. Any society that rejects this technology is a society that rejects fundamental freedom. I felt like Eric's moral clarity pierced through the bullshit like a knife through butter. And David and I watched as SBF absolutely withered under this approach. One thing struck me at the time. It seemed that crypto had made a grave mistake in entrusting so much to people like Sam who didn't share our values. I was so happy to trade them off in some calculated game of maximum expected value. But what I didn't know at the time was how grave that mistake would be. SBF, during the time of our recording, was actually covering up one of the biggest frauds since Bernie Madoff. By that point, at the end of October in 2022, he had gambled away over $8 billion in customer funds. I don't know what his long-term plan was. Maybe he was hoping for some way to last long enough to win it all back. Maybe he didn't have a plan. Maybe it was all hubris. But 11 days later, it would all start to come crashing down. I still, to this day, have no idea why he showed up to this debate 11 days before the fall of his kingdom. In fact, I think the debate itself may have been the spark that took him down. I mean, he must regret doing the podcast now, because in the hours and days after the debate, the crypto community turned on him. There was this sense of betrayal, of high alert, and it didn't take us long to sniff out the truth of his fraud. Massive credit to CoinDesk for breaking the story of the Alameda balance sheet. Everything followed from there. Now, he's declared guilty in a U.S. court of law after hurting many people, doing incredible damage to this industry that we love. And I'm thankful we have a legal consensus process in the U.S. that afforded a fair trial and due process. I'm thankful that justice has been served. The values of SBF, and many of those like him in 2022, were a stage 3 cancer that we had to cut out at some point, because if they persisted much longer, they would have been terminal. I'm thankful for the bear market for giving us the opportunity. I know that criminals and scammers will visit our industry again in the future, and I hope those of us who live through SBF will be wiser the next time. But above all, I think it's important that we remember the true hope of crypto. It's not in another set of bankers like SBF. It's in decentralized finance. It's in holding our own private keys. It's in running our own validator. It's in Ethereum. It's in Bitcoin. This is the real revolution. This is the bankless revolution, and it's just getting started. Protocols, not people. Code, not kings. Let's get back to going bankless. Hey, Bankless Nation, it is the first Friday of November. David, what time is it?
Oh, Ryan, it's the Bankless Friday weekly roll-up, which is always an ambitious endeavor, yet we persevere nonetheless into the frontier with coffee, but I'm not having coffee because it's 8:54 p.m. for me.
No, that's probably
the latest roll-up we've ever recorded.
Okay, why is it so late? Because you're in a different time zone, right?
Yeah, different time zone. Also, I took a flight. I was in Amsterdam this morning. I'm now in Lisbon for ETH Lisbon. Flight was delayed, weather in Amsterdam, blah, blah, blah. New podcast setup. Here we are.
This is crazy. And we've got like a new setup today. So we've been tinkering around with that. So it's a lot to get the roll up to you guys, but we hope you appreciate it. We got a lot of topics to talk about. What's coming up next, David, is Gary Gensler. And he's coming after PayPal now. Okay, PayPal. Oh, it's not even a crypto company, but they're doing crypto things. So of course, Gary is the cop on the beat as usual. So we'll talk about that. What else?
The Celestia mainnet is out along with the Celestia token, TIA, the token. How much was dropped? What is the market cap of Celestia? We're going to get to that. And of course, it's Solana season. I don't know if you've noticed, Ryan, but the narrative around crypto Twitter, around with Solana breakpoint going on, which is where I just came from, the Solana people are very happy right now. Solana season is in.
Well, that's because Sol price is going up. So we want to talk about why that might be happening. I want to get your insight today. But before we get in, we got to shout out our friends and sponsors over at Doppel. Doppel wants to whack all the doppelgangers on the head. What do I mean by that, David? Explain Doppel.
Yeah, so there is just a litany of phishing scams getting more and more sophisticated going around crypto so far. And I just ran into one, a doppelganger of our writer, Jack, who went out to some organization saying, hey, we will totally write articles about you in the Bankless newsletter. Just pay us money.
It's not the real Jack.
It's not the real Jack. Doppel is somebody that goes out and dops all of the doppelgangers. These are not real words. And prevents them from doing the things that would involve your customers, your app depositors, anyone from losing money instead of giving it to you for your product. And so if you plan on having a successful app, or if you do have a successful app, you should go talk to Doppel. That's doppel.com/sign-up. There's also a link in the show notes.
Fight the fishers. Fight them back, all right? Nice. There's a free trial with that too, if you click the link in the show notes. David, let's talk about the markets this week. Where is Bitcoin looking on the 15th birthday of the Bitcoin white paper? Yep. We just celebrated that on October 31st earlier this week. Well, tell us about the prices and we'll get to that.
Yeah, so up 2.5% on the week, starting at 34,100. The last time I checked it, Bitcoin was 34,990. Hey. It's bounced off of 35,000 a handful of times, really trying to get up and above it and trying to hold it. It's flirted with being above 35,000. It's not totally ready yet, but man, it really wants to be there.
Look at this. It's just, you know, that big candle on, I guess that was the 23rd of October, around that time.
Can we call that the Coin Telegraph candle?
Yeah, I guess that's what it was, the Coin Telegraph candle. But we've maintained. That's what's impressive about the last week or so, is that we've maintained. So we're up 2.5% on the week. And let's talk a little bit, while we're talking about Bitcoin, about this momentous occasion. So 15 years, it is now 15 years after the first publishing of the Bitcoin white paper by a guy by the name of Satoshi Nakamoto. He released this white paper. The title of this is Bitcoin, a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. And it starts like this, the very first sentence. A purely peer-to-peer version of electronic cash would allow online payments to be sent directly from one party to another without going through a financial institution. And of course,
it's called a bank.
Yeah, the first bankless money system. We got to celebrate that. And of course, within, I think, about 64 days, on January 3rd, the first block of the Bitcoin blockchain was officially pushed out to mainnet. So a short time later. And, you know, Bitcoin is doing its own celebration in the charts, too. Right. Have you looked at this chart lately, David? This is the Bitcoin dominance chart. Okay. And I think this is really interesting to look at. We are about 53% Bitcoin dominance at this point in time. So
wow, that's really high. So the market cap of all of crypto is 53% Bitcoin.
Composed of
crypto,
Bitcoin.
Crypto is 53% Bitcoin. Wow. Yep. That's definitely higher than it's been in a really long time, right?
Yes. But also a lot lower than it used to be back in the heady days of 2014. Bitcoin was about 99% dominant. It was about 99% of all of crypto, and it's been down since then. But it's popping back up, okay? It's lows. Bitcoin dominance lows. It hit a low in 2017, late 2017, at the last peak of the bull cycle at about 37%. Okay, that was a low in the dominance. And then a few other lows in 2022 of about 40%. Now it's back up to 53%. So Bitcoin on a tear in celebration of its birthday.
That is a 2.5 year high for Bitcoin. Congrats to Bitcoin.
Yeah, you know who else was congratulating Bitcoin, David?
Is this the person who was wishing Bitcoin a happy birthday?
Yeah, it's our secret person. I'm a big Bitcoin fan. Gary Gensler. He tweets out, Nakamoto went as Satoshi Nakamoto for Halloween, would we be able to tell? That's his hilarious joke. Happy 15th anniversary, Gensler says, to Satoshi's favorite white paper that started crypto. And then he says this, David. You're going to love this. Any crypto companies that are tricking investors should start treating them to compliance with securities laws.
He made it about him. Ooh, I hate this man so much.
Oh, the ultimate troll. I mean, you got to hand it to him, though. That is a pretty good troll of the industry right there.
Do you remember his April Fool's troll?
No.
He put on the deal with it glasses on his profile picture. So the current profile picture that you're currently seeing, put the just deal with it glasses on
God,
it. And like, to me, I was like, this isn't a troll. This is an admission of guilt. It made me so mad. He's like trolling the crypto community. He's like, God, just deal with it.
Why are why are unelected like bureaucrats trolling us?
Trolling us? Yeah.
It's so weird. Where is that in the job description?
I mean, this tweet is a troll. This is a trolling tweet. Troll. He is trolling us with his tweet.
Any crypto companies that are tricking investors should start treating them to compliance with the securities law. Okay. But of course, Bitcoin's okay. And he's celebrating Satoshi Nakamoto. Unbelievable. This is Stanley Druckenmiller, though, had a good quote about Bitcoin on the celebratory week. Do you want to hear this, David?
Yes, please.
All right, let me play it.
Finally, gold and Bitcoin.
Yeah, I'm 70 years old. I own gold. I was surprised that Bitcoin got going. But, you know, it's clear that the young people look at it as a store of value because it's a lot easier to do stuff with. And 17 years, to me, it's a brand. I like gold because it's a 5,000-year-old brand, but the young people have all the money, or certainly the ones on the West Coast do. So I like them both.
Okay.
I don't own any Bitcoin, to be frank, but I should.
There you go, David. I don't own any Bitcoin, to be frank, but I should. That is Stanley Druckenmiller, legendary Wall Street investor, hedge fund, billionaire worth about $6.2 billion. Too old for Bitcoin himself, he says. He likes gold. He respects the brand.
I'm just too old for Bitcoin, but yeah. Kids love it. Which is so funny because this is what we were saying all of last bull market is just like, as boomers hand down their wealth to the kids, it's going into crypto.
Yeah. It's like, thanks, mom and dad. Thanks, grandma and grandpa. You know where this money's going.
I don't have a house, but I'll have crypto.
Of course. Yeah. So, and of course, then in January 3rd is when the Bitcoin blockchain launched with this legendary headline from the Times, Chancellor on the brink of second bailout for banks. Mm-hmm. What this revolution has always been about from day one, David. A revolution to go bankless. Speaking of which,
we're going to just end up repeating some of these bits of news in about 6 days.
Why not? speaking of which, David, you want to tell us about the ETH charts for the week?
ETH price, not quite as exciting. Started the week at 1790, up a 1% on the week, over to 1810. Got up as high as 1860 this week, but overall, it's just quiet in ETH land these days.
How about the ratio, David? That's not quite as down.
Yeah. I actually kind of wanted to kill the ratio, but like if I did it in this week, it would just be like, you can't do it this week because it's just getting slaughtered. You can't kill the ratio.
Wait. What do you mean kill the ratio? Like never
just from the agenda? I'm just saying like, I don't know if the ratio is relevant to many people. Like it's kind of what you and I think of, but I can't kill it now because it's down so bad. Like,
you know what? Okay.
Then we can kill it.
Yeah. If you killed it now, it would be capitulation.
It would be embarrassing.
And by the way, I saw a tweet about this. I think someone tagged you and I. Maybe that's what you're referring to. Vance Spencer goes, only plebs talk about the ratio. Is that why you want to kill it? You don't want to be Vance Spencer pleb?
I did not see that tweet, but I can understand the point of like, it's just a narrow focus of what crypto is. I think we actually either kill the ETH BTC ratio or we add the ETH Solana ratio, which I also don't want to do this week.
I don't think so. I think the ETH Bitcoin ratio is much more durable than people are thinking at this point.
Chris
in the market.
Berninski likes it. Yeah.
So I think it's fantastic.
According to Vance Spencer, Chris Berninski is a pleb. Do you hear that, Chris?
You know what? Yeah, we could start some beef on the Bankless podcast. I don't care. If you don't talk about the ratio, I'm going to talk about the ratio. I think it is still a very important metric, and we should keep it in the roll up. But let's talk about the cryptocurrency market. Yeah, market cap. What are we at on the week?
Happy numbers. I think we were at 1.29 last week. We're at 1.34 this week. So there is some healthy, sustained growth in the total crypto market cap. I mean, that's what happens when Bitcoin dominance is like at 54%.
David, tell me about some tokens that moved in the last 7 days, one of which is the Sol token. So
yeah,
30%,
the other one's not a token.
The other's not a token. Okay. 30% on the week for the Solana token and 62% on the 2 weeks. So absolutely monster movement for Solana. I think on the month, that's about 72% over the last 30 days. There's pretty crazy upside here.
No, like Solana, the Sol tokens, the Solana narrative has definitely taken a lot of the oxygen out of the room this week. I've been at Solana Breakpoint for the past like 4 or 5 days. And just generally, as like a rule of thumb, when I open up my phone and I check prices and I'm like, oh, I'm about to refresh and the price is going to be higher. And then it is. And if you do that like 6 times in a row, that's when I start to call froth. And so I did that between the prices of like $40 and $44 of like, I'm just going to refresh it. And it's going to be higher. That's froth. and so, I mean, like it can like mellow out for a little bit and then go up later. But like, man, when you just know that you just refresh and it's higher and it is for 5 times in a row, that's froth.
That's when you know. That's when you know things are getting frothy. Is there an explanation for this? So this is from Vance Spencer. We're just talking about him. He says this: always surprised there are people who actually short crypto. I think he's talking about people shorting Solana. Look at the Sol chart. Clearly, someone just got carted out. In my opinion, most crypto shorts are people trying to run a TradFi-esque long short book. They think we are playing in the NBA. Sir, we are playing slam ball in a bounce castle. That's slam ball in a bounce castle. What's going on here, David? Is Vance implying that people are actually trying to short the Sol token?
Yeah, well, this is what he's saying. So $16 million of Solana short is just like a lot of momentary buy pressure all at once, which is what he is saying is like one of the reasons why Sol price is going up, at least going up so quickly and so violently. Like it's going up. It went up in just like so much in like 4 to 5 days, but it's also been going up for like 2 weeks straight. And so like this one person who just like got liquidated on the short side of things definitely is helping with the Sol price. But also I would just say like Solana narrative is just like really, really strong right now, which is because of the price, which like actually feeds back into the price. It's just full season.
Yeah. Tell me about the Solana conference. So you were there, feet on the ground. So yeah, what was it like? What's the vibe?
Yeah. So I went to the Solana conference, the Solana Breakpoint. This is the third Breakpoint. The first was in Lisbon. Fun fact, which is where I am now, at 2021, when Solana price was like $250. And apparently it was just like, absolute just fest of money just flying everywhere. Some party had the cops roll up to the house and they were like, you guys can't have a party like this, and they were like, we'll buy the house, and the cops was like, that wasn't a solution.
Was that last are you talking about last year?
That was 2021. That was like in December 2021, so like peak of the market. So this one, it was in Amsterdam, kind of outside of the city. Maybe like 1,500, 2,000 people that were there, maybe like 50 community builders and investors. Maybe more on the builder side. Definitely kind of felt like an inner circle of communities, a community that had banded together that all felt like, yo, we are sitting on something really, really like powerful here and really, really cool. Kind of felt like 2018 to 2019 Ethereum, when like you, me, and all of the other Ethereum people were like, yo, like there's something here and everyone else doesn't see it. And that's crazy. Except the Solana people know that that's happened once before. So like I feel like they have a little bit more conviction, is kind of my hot take. The archetype of people at the Solana conference is just like these low level engineers that understand the relationship between hardware and software. Like the at the point where hardware becomes software, like that intersection, like really low level engineers, like X, SpaceX, X Tesla, X Google types. Yeah, I think that these are kind of all my hot takes. Not even all that hot. Just my like my sit rep. Like the reason why I wanted to go to the Solana conference. Like what the hell is David doing at a Solana conference? it just turns out like if you want to get a like a vibe check for what Solana is, like you don't do it through crypto Twitter because the Solana people on crypto Twitter are super toxic. Which is perhaps like people like my fault and something I'm working on. So I just wanted to go like drink from the faucet myself. And so I recorded an episode with Austin from the Solana Foundation in Anatoly. That'll be out on Tuesday, I believe. Out on Tuesday. Yeah.
Well, very cool. There's also another big move around the week. It's not a token, though. It is a coin, the stock. So what's coin up to? And I believe as of our recording, because we're recording so late on a Thursday, the Q3 update, the quarterly earnings report for Coinbase has just been updated. I don't know if that's reflected in the price of coin. It looks like we're up in the post-market trading. But yeah, what's coin been doing lately?
I don't know if it is up. It was up almost 9% today pre-market. And then as soon as...
Oh, it's down post-market.
It dumped a bunch. It dumped a bunch. So yeah. So it's down post-market, but okay, up 8.75% pre-market, down 4.5% post-market. So still up like 4% on the day. I guess it didn't totally like the earnings report, but overall, I would say just not all that bad. I mean, it's up 4% on the day. So it was a good day. The coin price has been up just 5% on the week. So I guess pretty modest, but I think just I've seen more and more people just pay attention to coin lately.
All right, let's turn to some bigger markets beyond crypto. Let's talk about U.S. GDP because some numbers came in last week as well. So U.S. GDP grew at 4.9% annual pace in the third quarter. That's a pretty big quarter. Look at this.
That's large.
Kind of chunky. So last quarter, Q2 is 2.1%. The quarter before, 2.2%. This is a monster 4.9% quarter. Compare that to, should I compare that to 2022? In the third quarter, it was 2.7%. 2021 was 3.3%. So pretty big quarter for GDP as far as quarters go, David.
Big plus one to there's no recession happening. This is a big plus one to Fed is going to keep rates higher for longer because apparently the economy can take it. I like the idea of not having a recession. That's good.
Yeah, you're right about the Fed because they did hold rates steady. So that was a decision that came in this week. They are holding the Fed funds rate between 5.25% and 5.5%. This is the second meeting in a row that they have held rates steady. Preceding that, though, the last 11 times before the last two times, they increased rates. So holding steady, and Powell said that the Fed is not considering or even discussing rate reductions at this time, I guess, especially back on a GDP for a quarter like that. So that's what the Fed is doing, David. And switching back to crypto, though, let's talk a little bit about liquidity, in particular, stablecoin liquidity. This is a tweet from Nick Carter. What's he saying here, David?
Nick Carter is calling the bottom of stablecoin supply. And if you've been paying attention to Bankless for a while, we kind of think that stablecoin supply in crypto is basically synonymous with liquidity. The number of dollars that we have in our industry is going to be a very strong indicator to how much liquidity that we actually have. And so Nick Carter has the chart from the block, just of all the stablecoins out there, Tether, USDC, DAI, BUSD, and all the other ones. And I mean, it's been down ever since Terra Luna. And it went down really, really fast with Terra Luna. And then it's just kind of been slowly tapering out ever since then. It's been down. It's been down for like 2+ years now. And it's looking like it's starting to go back up. And this is what Nick Carter is saying, is he is calling the bottom of stablecoin supply. And if you believe that this is the bottom of stablecoin supply, hence, ergo, that liquidity in crypto is up only, what happens when you have more liquidity in your assets? They go up in price. That's what they do. More liquidity, higher prices. And so this has been something that we've said along with our Jim Bianco podcast. Just like when you see stablecoin supply trending upwards, you can be bullish. You will have permission to be bullish. And so this is a bullish indicator.
Yeah, so we are one step before we're starting to see it increase, but maybe it's bottom. David, I wouldn't be surprised. Right at about 120 billion or so in total stablecoin supply, I would not be surprised if this market cycle we hit a trillion. What do you think about that?
Yes, I agree. I agree. Right. Because right. I mean, what's the one thing that has product market fit in crypto? It's stablecoins.
Stablecoins and treasuries, and particularly if you include treasuries in that as well. David, what do we have coming up next?
Coming up next, SBF takes the stand. I'll give you the recap. Did he land the Hail Mary? Place your bets. I know where I'm placing my bets. Nick Carter versus the Wall Street Journal part two. He is, he's got a bone to pick. And he has definitely picked it. And there's just going to be so much more. A $2.7 billion mainnet drops. We're going to get to all of these details and more. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken, our preferred crypto exchange for 2023. If you're getting bullish, you know where to express that. That's on Kraken. There is a link in the show notes to get started with Kraken today. Kraken knows crypto. Kraken's been in the crypto game for over a decade, and as one of the largest and most trusted exchanges in the industry, Kraken is on the journey with all of us to see what crypto can be. Human history is a story of progress. It's part of us, hardwired. We're designed to seek change everywhere, to improve, to strive. And if anything can be improved, why not finance? Crypto is a financial system designed with the modern world in mind. Instant, permissionless, and 24/7. It's not perfect, and nothing ever will be perfect. But crypto is a world-changing technology at a time when the world needs it the most. That's the Kraken mission, to accelerate the global adoption of cryptocurrency so that you and the rest of the world can achieve financial freedom and inclusion. Head on over to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Cryptocurrency services are provided to U.S. and U.S. territory customers by Payward Ventures Inc. PVI, doing business as Kraken. Are you launching a token? Is it already live? How are you managing the legal and tax for providing token awards for your team? Toku simplifies everything about managing token grant compensation, and you can get started with them for free. You'll have access to top-notch legal and tax support to handle the distribution and management of tokens for your team. Toku caters to every step in the process, from user-friendly legal templates for granting tokens to tracking vesting periods and calculating withholding taxes. Toku understands every grant structure, token purchase agreements, restricted token awards, restricted token units, token options, and all the other ones. Toku is already simplifying this today for leading companies like Protocol Labs, DYDX Foundation, Mina Foundation, and many more. You can learn more about how Toku can help you streamline your token management and get started for free. Visit Toku at toku.com/bankless or click the link in the description below. Ryan, what are you showing me on my screen?
I'm showing you a glorious picture of our friend. Actually, not our friend, but not previous friend. Podcast guest. Let me just say that. Sam Bankman-Fried. He's on the stand.
That is a
the cartoon drawing. I don't think they quite captured his essence, I would say, in this drawing.
He got so much blush on. Wow.
The hair's a little shorter. Hair's short, I don't know. Yeah. The facial expression is not quite the same. Yeah, the ears are a little engorged. But here he is on the stand. What was he doing on the stand? All right, this is a follow-up from last week, where apparently Sam's like thrown the Hail Mary pass, probably against all the advice of his lawyers, but maybe not. Maybe they're like, wow, what does this guy have to lose? Put him on the stand. And so he gets up on the stand. What did he say, David? What on earth could this man say to us?
Yeah, but first to really set the stage here, if you go on the stand, you get to spout your truth because your lawyer, your own lawyer, will underhand you all of the right questions. It'll be perfect. You can just knock them out of the park. And then the prosecution gets a turn. So it's a bargain that you got
to
make.
Didn't he have to do this, David? Didn't he have to do a pre-show with the judge? It was just like him and the judge. They sent all the jurors out. I think that happened last Thursday.
That did happen. That was like an anomaly. They needed to like be able to determine which is valid to present the jury.
What was admissible in court? Right. So the judge was like, okay, I'll let this go.
Right.
Okay. And so then he went in front of the jury, which is what we're talking about now.
Yep, exactly. Okay. So last week, again, going back on Thursday and Friday was when the defense, SBF's lawyer, was able to ask SBF questions. And so that was last Friday. We weren't able to cover that because we do weekly rolls on Thursdays. So that ended in a cliffhanger because SBF took the stand and was questioned by the defense. And the vibe that I got from just a handful of people doing reporting on that day was that Sam was extremely prepared, obviously, actually did a good job of stringing coherent sentences together. Really? And probably because he had his Adderall and was overall able to produce a nugget of convincing compassion for his side of the story. So like, this is the one moment where people were like, maybe he did just F up.
Maybe there's a chance.
Maybe there's a chance. Right. And this all ended on Friday. So after Sam was able to kind of give a more glowing perception of himself, on the jury went away for the weekend and they were able to sleep on that for like multiple days.
What kind of things was he saying? It's like, it's just, you know, growing pains. I heard exactly. someone say, or exactly. like, oh, I delegated too much to the wrong people. I kind of lost mm-hmm. sight of, right. you know, how I was managing this.
It was my subordinates. Kind of yeah. It was really unfortunate. It was an accident. Whoopsies. I've learned a lot of lessons. Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. Okay. So at the very end of Friday, the judge ends by saying, okay, we're going to resume with Sam on the stand on Monday with the prosecution doing a cross-examination, to which the prosecution said something to the effect of, yes, we certainly will. It will be long and we are very interested in it.
Oh my God.
Basically the prosecution is like, let's fucking go. Let's do this.
Rolling up their sleeves. All right, we're doing this.
Okay, and that was this week. And so next week comes and the prosecution just gets to go after Sam Bankman-Fried. And the prosecution apparently just had like layup after layup to herself.
Basically. Do you know what? As a prosecutor, I would be overwhelmed at like there would be too many options. Where do I even start?
Yeah. Apparently, there was just a number of times where like the prosecution asked Sam Bankman-Fried about like, did you ever say this thing in this way? And like, it was such a specific way of asking the question where like the entire courtroom and all the audience was like, oh, she's got something. So there's no way that Sam can answer anything without falling right into her trap. Okay. Yeah. Okay, some of the themes here. SBF increasingly relied on not remembering, especially as the day went on. Yes, he said, I do not recall in his answers 104 times and also answered, yep, 282 times.
Wait, just 104? On there was 104 I do not recalls on yeah. one day?
Yes, on one day, just That's on one day. And like, you know, lot. You know the Sam Bankman-Fried, the yep.
Oh yeah.
Yep. I've heard some of that. Like 282. Imagine listening to 282 SBF yeps just on Monday.
No, I can't
shoot
imagine.
Me in the face. Okay, so Sam denied that he and Caroline ever discussed the seven alternative balance sheets like Caroline claimed. SBF's version of the story was that Caroline just sent him one balance sheet and it was referred to as all seven, which
she
both
must have made up
reasonable.
All the other six, huh?
Yeah. She just didn't show him one through six, of course. Okay. He said that he did not know about Alameda's problems. He said Sam was surprised and concerned when he learned about Alameda's potential bankruptcy in June of 2022 due to a bug and it had an $8 billion fiat liability to FTX. He was surprised to learn these things in June of 2022.
Shocked.
He said that there were risk management mistakes, said that mistakes were made at Alameda, not hedging against an investment in some Bitcoin miner thing. That lack of hedging allegedly led to a loss of over $10 billion. He denied the existence of a risk department at FTX and Alameda, and he claimed that he just trusted the wrong people, blamed challenges like working at a startup. It was like building a plane while flying it, he said. He was asked about how Alameda Research was able to spend $8 billion of FTX customer deposits, and to which he responded, I deeply regret not taking a closer look into it. I'm sure he does regret that.
I bet he regrets it.
Yeah. And when the lawyer pressed him about the specifics of the $8 billion, SBF said, money's fungible anyways. I wasn't particularly interested in trying to dole out blame over how and why the money was used at all. If there's one thing I know about Sam Bankman-Fried, it's that he definitely thinks money's fungible. It's like, oh, yes. Just like spend this money here and that money there. It's fungible.
To be fair, I also think money is fungible, as you, David.
Right.
It's yes. pretty hard yes. to argue with that line of yes. defense. Money
but if I had an exchange, I would still consolidate accounts and separate them differently.
Yeah. It's not a good answer to the question of where's our $8 billion, Sam? Yeah. Money is fungible.
Well, money's fungible. You know, the $8 billion is somewhere. It's fungible.
Oh, man. I kind of wish I was there for actually that day of court particular. I don't know. Maybe some catharsis.
Of all the days in the court, this one obviously was the most well attended.
Yeah.
I think they had like three or four spillover rooms.
Oh my God, I bet it was a circus. What the heck is this, though? We were just looking at one drawing of Sam Bankman-Fried. This is a much more flattering version. Is this also
is Chad Bankman-Fried with an absolute chiseled jaw and like kind of scruffy hair? Yeah. Looking buff. Yeah. Who drew this?
Yeah,
are they looking at the same Sam?
Yeah, it's much different than this
version. That is a real court drawing of Sam Bankman-Fried.
Wow.
Okay. That's a very different sale. These are different images.
People are taking some liberties in the drawings here. All right.
I want whoever drew this one to draw a picture of me.
Not if anyone's listening. Yeah. You have to go on the stand for that, David.
No.
Okay. Fill us in. Nick Carter versus Wall Street Journal. Did they apologize yet? I haven't looked at this at all, so you're going to have to fill me in. Okay. But last we left things, the Wall Street Journal completely lied about crypto being tied up with Hamas and completely exaggerated. They said something like $90 million worth of crypto was transmitted to Hamas. And it turns out it's something like
130.
Yeah, 130, 90 to 130. It turns out it was something like 450,000 when you go look at the blockchain data. Have they apologized for this yet?
So they did do this super flaccid retraction, I'll call it. it was a confusing retraction. It was a correction, and they just were like really vague about it. And so it was like technically they retracted, but they really didn't. Like all of the harm is still on the table.
What did they do then? I'm not even sure they.
If you read what they say, it's just like confusing and doesn't actually provide any clarity about anything. It's just like they succumb to the pressure and they get to say like, look, we retracted. But then if you read it, it's like you just were confusing.
This is very confusing. This is a very long.
Nick Carter is not satisfied. And so what did Nick Carter do? He announced that he's going to have $500 in Bitcoin bounties, open-ended bounties. So anyone can apply for this. There's more than one. For 21 best open source analysis of the facts surrounding the Wall Street Journal Warren letter. He's actually given out 28 bounties so far. So he increased to 21 because Arkham Intelligence also joined the effort to fund this. And so this has turned into a mutual pot to finance the investigation of truth around the details of Hamas's reception of crypto assets using the blockchain, because we have this amazing tool called a blockchain that allows you to audit this. And so there's just been some incredible data that has come out from people, just open source investigation of the exact flow of funds that went to Hamas. So this is just one of many people of the people that have put an investigation together. It is very, very detailed. Ryan, if you scroll down, you can kind of just
what am I looking at?
Yeah, just like this is just like a map of transactions. Very thorough. It takes some skills to really put some of this together. So this one particular tweet that we're showing is one of 28, and I'll just read two lines here. That this one particular person came to the conclusion of, where they said, according to the Wall Street Journal, wallets connected to Hamas received about $41 million over a similar time period, an arbitrary time period that the Wall Street Journal said, which was proven false. In reality, that account connected to Hamas has only received about $250,000 in total during that same time period. So just like really good grassroots investigation, because Nick Carter and a few other people are putting up a pot of money to actually do real research. Not like Elizabeth Warren cares, because she's like doubling down.
So she's not apologizing then? She's not retracting anything? Oh, this is we have got a clip of Elizabeth Warren. I actually haven't looked at this. Should we play this?
Last year, you wrote that, quote, in their attempt to avoid being traced, illegal actors have adopted ever more sophisticated cryptocurrency technologies, such as non-custodial wallets.
Non-custodial
wallets. You
wrote
that Hamas uses non-custodial wallets to evade detection. Do those wallets pose a particularly high risk of attracting terrorists and other dangerous people?
Thank you for the question. It is important, perhaps if I may, just to refer to your earlier comments about the funding of Hamas. The major funding of Hamas, unfortunately, the current sanctuary regime is far from being sufficient, and most of its budget and funds are still going through the traditional channels. And I want to put that clear because crypto is a problem, but this is not the major problem, and we have to look, you know, on other traditional channels like banking and exchanges and money exchanges and cash and so forth. So let's not.
Okay, here's an expert actually telling her that the problem isn't crypto. The problem is like the traditional banking system. Interesting.
we have a second. Better clip. So let's listen to the next clip of the same person.
Let's don't lose sight and focus from the big picture. Crypto is currently a very small part of the puzzle. The major funding channels are, were, and remain state funding, Iran, and others. Those are the major players. Most of the funds are still being transferred by the traditional channels that we all know from the past. Banks, money transmitter, payment system, hawala, money exchange, trade-based tourism financing, charity, cash, shell companies, and crypto. The effort should be global and focus on imposing global sanctions on Hamas and their sponsors, as was the case with ISIS.
Well, there you go.
Liz Warren just got told to calm down inside of Congress by the person that she was asking to basically like help her say that it's crypto.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned this during the first clip, Ryan, like she's going after the self-hosted wallets. She's trying to blame this on self-hosted wallets, which also ironically, a lot of the funds, the actual funds, the $450,000 funds that went to Hamas, went through centralized exchange.
Not even self-hosted
that got
wallets.
Frozen. That got frozen.
She just wants an opportunity to just slam self-hosted wallets, bankless wallets.
But this isn't the opportunity, is the thing. There's no opportunity for her here.
I know.
All of the cards are on our side.
I'm just worried that when there does come a time when a self-hosted wallet is culpable in some sort of transaction, she's going to go right after it. Like, you know, like she's primed to do that. This was, by the way, that expert was Dr. Shlomit Wagman, who set the record straight on terrorism and its non-relationship with crypto. So excellent job there. So what's Nick Carter saying here, David, in this tweet?
Yeah. So this is another article about the same issue. So the article says, since the Hamas attacks of October 7th, the most prominent public crypto fundraising campaign has been operated by Gaza Now, a pro-Hamas news organization. However, only $21,000 in cryptocurrency has been donated since October 7th. And thanks to the effort of crypto businesses and researchers, much of this has been frozen, preventing Gaza Now from being able to use these funds. On October 9th, Gaza Now sent around $2,000 of the donated crypto to an exchange, presumably to cash out, where it was promptly frozen. In addition, around $9,000 in stablecoin donations were frozen by Tether, the stablecoin's issuer. Crypto is the worst platform to do terrorism stuff. It will just get frozen because it's stablecoins, which are going to get frozen, or it's centralized exchanges, which are going to get frozen. Like, again, all of the arguments are on our side here.
No, I get it. I get it. The facts and circumstances this time around. I think in a future time, it could be just straight Bitcoin. It could be straight Ether. It could be no ability to freeze
it. Not the stable coins, like DAI. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just think that this apparatus, this kind of like push in DC from the anti-crypto army is going to attack it. They're just waiting for it. They're primed to attack crypto.
Well, that's why I think that I'm so thankful that Nick Carter is like digging in the knife on this one, because it shows the cards of how dishonest and how much of an agenda that Liz Warren has. So when in the future, when there's like rampant privacy everywhere on crypto, which is the version of crypto that I see, we will be able to go and say like, you just hate crypto.
Look, it's meant Hamas is using the internet too. I mean, they're using TCP/IP, right? Like, come on. They're using all sorts of technology. Technology is neutral. I don't know. That's an uphill battle with this group. But David, we are making some progress on one particular issue. And that particular issue is something that we brought up last week. Do you remember there was a regulatory fight with the IRS, again, coming from the Elizabeth Warren camp, anti-crypto army? The IRS had a massively anti-DeFi interpretation of some regulations. And our role as the Bankless community, as a crypto community, was to comment on their comments page,
Well, we needed 10,000 comments to extend the deadline by 1 year.
And you know what we got, David? We got 25,000 comments.
That's more than 10,000.
This is a tweet. Over 25,000 comments have been received by the IRS regarding their broker rulemaking proposal. Over 12,000 posted to the docket on regulations.gov. Clearly a sign that something is wrong with the proposal. This is the most popular the IRS has probably ever been on its comment page. And we did that. We played a role in that. So hopefully they are hearing the crypto community. Mm-hmm. They're hearing U.S. citizens loud and clear. Unfortunately, the last opportunity to comment about that was October 31st. But fortunately, many of you did because we got 25,000. And that is how we have our voices heard on this particular issue. So what they choose to do with it is up to them. But we will keep you guys informed of next steps.
Ryan, you remember from the episode that we did where we did this big call to action? They have to read every comment.
Yes.
The comment I submitted was like 6 paragraphs.
Yeah, it was an AI submission, which I love too, by the way. So well, like,
whatever.
AIs I set mine just like a hair below spicy, by the way, in my...
mine was very comment. Spicy.
Oh, you spiced it up?
Oh, well, I spiced it up, dude.
David, what else are we covering today?
$2.7 billion mainnet just dropped. That doesn't happen every day. We'll talk about which one. What does Elon Musk have to say about NFTs? Huh. And also, why does Elon Musk want everyone to go bankless in under 1 year? He charges his employees with helping everyone go bankless in just 1 year. What is going on? I kind of like the sound of this. And also, remember SafeMoon, Ryan?
Yes. No.
Well, it turns out it was not safe, nor did it moon. The execs got arrested by the Department of Justice for misappropriating users' funds and manipulating the market. I am just shocked. We're going to get to all of these details and more, but first a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially MetaMask Portfolio. If you've not opened up your MetaMask Portfolio, what are you waiting for? Go try it out while you listen to these sponsors. MetaMask Portfolio is your one-stop shop to navigate the world of DeFi. And now bridging seamlessly across networks doesn't have to be so daunting anymore. With competitive rates and convenient routes, MetaMask Portfolio's bridge feature lets you easily move your tokens from chain to chain using popular Layer 1 and Layer 2 networks. And all you have to do is select the network you want to bridge from and where you want your tokens to go. From there, MetaMask vets and curates the different bridging platforms to find the most decentralized, accessible, and reliable bridges for you. To tap into the hottest opportunities in crypto, you need to be able to plug into a variety of networks, and nobody makes that easier than MetaMask Portfolio. Instead of searching endlessly through the world of bridge options, click the bridge button on your MetaMask extension or head over to metamask.io/portfolio to get started. Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world. And now, something big is happening. Introducing the Celo Layer 2. It's a game-changing proposal that's going to bring Celo's rapidly growing ecosystem home to Ethereum. Vitalik has shared his excitement for the Celo Layer 2 on the Celo forum, so has Ben Jones from Optimism. But why? The Celo Layer 2 will bring huge advantages, like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability, and one-block finality. What does all that mean? Rock-solid security, a trustless bridge to Ethereum, and more real-world use cases for Ethereum without compromise. And real-world adoption is happening. Active addresses on Celo have grown over 500% in the last 6 months. With the Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low, and you can even pay for gas using ERC-20 tokens. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forum. Follow @Celo.org on Twitter and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.
All right, David, tell me about that $2 billion mainnet. What are we looking at here?
Celestia, congrats on the mainnet launch. What is Celestia? It is a data availability network. It is a chain that is meant to do one thing and one thing extremely well, which is provide data availability or data publishing, as we are calling it now. And so this Celestia thesis is highly synonymous with the rollup thesis. Celestia thinks that there is going to be thousands and thousands and millions of rollups, and it wants to sell them data availability. We've already seen a rollup platform like Eclipse use Celestia for data availability. And the idea is like the more rollups that get data availability from Celestia, the more fees that it generates. It's also got this whole like light node optimization emphasis. We'll have to go down the Celestia rabbit hole. There's an episode I did with Nick White, the CEO, founder of Celestia forever ago. Anyways, the token TIA, why TIA for Celestia instead of CEL? I don't know. CEL is also Celsius's token, so maybe that's the reason.
That's probably
anyways,
why, dude.
That's probably why. 580,000 people received the airdrop. The current price of TIA is around $2.58, which is coming in at a fully diluted valuation, the last I checked, at $2.7 billion. So it's not every day that $2.7 billion just gets minted out of thin air. So congratulations to anyone that invested or has worked on or received the airdrop of Celestia.
Yeah, and congratulations to anyone who lives in the U.S. and who was protected by this airdrop from our friend.
Yeah, this dangerous, dangerous airdrop.
Could not access it. Couldn't VPN in. Nothing. Could not get it. Have to cross the border to Canada, I guess, so to get your airdrop.
I legitimately thought about just like, yo, I could just Uber to Canada for less than the cost of this.
Get my airdrop and get out real quick. All right, David, SafeMoon. Tell me about that. I barely remember SafeMoon. This was some meme coin in 2021, 2022. Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, this is how we knew the markets were frothy. I mean, kind of in hindsight. It's literally called SafeMoon because it safely... It's a safe bet that it goes to the moon. It's in the title. You know, it's in the title.
Who's shilling this? Like some big, like, was Dave Portnoy?
TikTok accounts. It was TikTok accounts.
TikToks,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It has a mechanism that, like, when you transfer it, it burns a part of it. So it's like pumponomics. Yep. Anyways, the Department of Justice arrested and charged the exec team with perpetrating a massive fraud on its investors. The SEC also targeted them for offering unregistered securities. You know, I'm not going to get in the front of the SEC on this one. It's like, you guys take these people
That's
away.
What you
get
should
them out
do.
Of here. Get
Thanks.
Them out.
Thanks, SEC, yeah. SEC on that. Yeah. Take the bad with the good. It's mostly bad, but I guess there's a little bit of good here. What did the execs do here? I'm reading a line here. Apparently, they withdrew more than $200 million from the project. That's the SafeMoon execs.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. They're charged with conspiracy to commit securities fraud, conspiracy to commit wire fraud, and money laundering. Yeah, anyone who does this also is totally money laundering. They're not paying their taxes. then they misappropriated investors' funds for personal use, a Porsche, other luxury vehicles, real estate, some other bullshit, I'm sure. Anyways. Yeah.
There you go. Well, it would be nice if the SEC spent more time doing stuff like that, but they're up
tip of the hat. More of this.
A tweet from Brian Armstrong says he's working hard on the Coinbase wallet. Our ambitious goal is to get the average transaction under 1 second, 1 second end-to-end, instant, cheap, and global. I think he's using the magic, the power of layer twos to do that. He's actually showing a demo here in this tweet. Don't blink, it says, is the Coinbase wallet transacting. Looks like sending maybe some ETH somewhere. Yeah, sending some ETH somewhere in a second.
Yeah, ETH between Arbitrum and Base, so two layer two chains.
Nice.
And then there's probably like five or seven different routes to do that, and then the Coinbase wallet is just obfuscating it because you have cryptographic assurances for layer twos. You have inclusion insurances, and so what can a wallet do? They can just make it snappy. There's like so much juice to squeeze left in the interoperability layer between layer twos and stuff like this. Just like the front end UX is one of them.
I love to see exchanges cozying up with layer twos. This is a Kraken with its own ETH deposits and withdrawals now supporting ZK Sync. This is, I believe, the first major exchange to support the ZK EVM and maybe the first to support a ZK rollup, David. So pretty big Kraken moving into that, and it's fantastic.
Other stuff in Kraken land, their Formula F1 NFT car finally got revealed. And so they had this like promo video of these race car drivers like talking about the NFTs that are, it's all like on the spoiler on the end. So when these F1 cars are driving really fast, the spoiler pushes the air
this
up.
This is the thing we were talking about, where you could get your NFT on the back of this car, right?
Yeah, sadly, my dick butt did not get accepted.
I don't know how sad that is. I think some of these race car drivers are pretty happy they don't have a dick butt.
Don't need to listen to the race cars, but like in the video, one race car is talking to the other one. It's like, yeah, I put this NFT on it because it's super distracting for the driver behind me.
That would be yours.
Which is probably true.
Speaking of NFTs, Elon Musk said something about NFTs earlier this week.
Oh, super positive, right?
Well, let's hear.
But I mean, NFTs, the funny thing is that the NFT is not even on the blockchain. It's just a URL to the JPEG. So it's not even like, it's like you should at least encode the JPEG in the blockchain. Because like if the URL, if the company housing the image goes out of business, you don't have the image anymore.
All right, David. Trivia on that. Is Elon Musk right about that? is an NFT, just a pointer. The NFT, the JPEG itself is not on the blockchain. Is that true?
That is yes and no. First, before I answer that question, I just love Joe Rogan's just like it's like those NFT scammers.
They got us again. Not even on the chain this whole time. We thought it was on the chain. It's not.
Yeah.
Did you think it was on the chain this whole time, David?
No, of course not. This is why NFTs like Autoglyphs are so cool. That not only are they on-chain, but they're generated natively on-chain. There are a good, strong selection of on-chain NFTs. Smaller NFTs, like pixelated ones, for example, CryptoPunks, for example, are on-chain.
Fully on-chain.
Fully on-chain. Like the JPEGs themselves. The JPEG's on-chain. The JPEG is on the chain. So you,
and it's usually not a JPEG. It's like sometimes it's a vector file, right? It's like an SVG
file. Yeah,
it's an
SVG. Because they're lower data. So there's like 20 of them. Shout out Treasure, the Treasure Small Brains. Those are on-chain. There's just like a good handful of NFTs
are
that are on-chain. There's also like NFTs, like I have like 12 NFTs made by my buddy Nate Moeller, who the NFTs themselves are like 1.2 gigabytes a pop.
Yes.
And those are not on chain. Those are actually stored on Arweave. And so using the modular blockchain thesis, data on Arweave, NFT on Ethereum, NFT points to Arweave. And then I can get my data from Arweave.
And Arweave is a decentralized storage layer. Okay, right. So it's not quite as kind of decentralized and secure as something maybe like Ethereum. It doesn't quite give you those guarantees, but it is much cheaper. It's optimized to store large files, and it's certainly better than a cloud provider, an AWS or something like that, or what Elon was talking about, a company that could go out of business, right? So that's kind of an interim type step with a lot of NFTs are stored on Arweave or IPFS.
Right. And it's also just important to remember, what is an NFT? An NFT is a file format. You can put a URL there. You can put an actual image there. You can put a pointer to another token or something else. So yes, Elon, you're actually mostly wrong. You're kind of right, but you're mostly wrong.
Yeah, kind of right. But like the spirit of that, I feel like is mostly wrong. You know, David, Elon, always the ambitious individual, he gave his employees at X, that is formerly Twitter, 1 year to create a system on X that replaces the banks. Do you know, he got his start over at PayPal, right? That's what, I think shortly after that,
he wanted to call X, by the way.
He wanted to call X. He got the X.com domain after that. And now wants to, it seems like, turn Twitter into a financial platform. So the quote is, when I say payments, I actually mean someone's entire financial life. If it involves money, it'll be on our platform, money or securities or whatever. So it's not like send $20 to my friend. I'm talking about you won't even need a bank account. How do you think that's possible, David? No bank account.
Yeah. I don't know how he does this without crypto.
Yeah, neither do I. Yeah. And I actually think when he says no bank account, he actually means there's going to be a bank account somewhere, unless he's using crypto. Yeah. I mean, PayPal definitely has a bank account, right? I mean, it's all kind of connected. You have to have a bank account. And I think he is getting a broker-dealer money transmission licenses across the U.S. right now. So, I mean, like, no bank account in air quotes here.
This is kind of the version of crypto that I don't want, which is that we use the power of crypto to just make a new banker. I don't want Elon Musk to be my banker.
I don't think
he should just focus on cars and Mars.
I don't think he's using crypto here, right? Like I don't know what this means, but I think
Stripe? Just Stripe only.
I think it's just a fintech play. If he starts using crypto, if he starts using like stable coins or something like that, then I think this gets a bit more interesting and a bit more bankless.
If he makes this fintech dominant X platform, it becomes very ripe to hook crypto into it in the back end.
I agree. Yeah. But I don't know if he's there yet.
Still prefer crypto. Spoiler.
Yeah. Speaking of PayPal, by the way, so PayPal just received a subpoena from the SEC. Apparently, they don't like what PayPal is doing with their PYUSD. This is a stablecoin product. Remember, Nick Carter came on the show. We did an entire episode on stablecoins. Mm-hmm. He told us a little bit about PYUSD. And according to Nick Carter, PYUSD is actually offers even better settlement and security guarantees than the PayPal dollars
in PayPal.
Yeah, than actual deposits in PayPal. But something about this the SEC doesn't like, maybe because it's tokenized. Gary yep. Gensler thinks he gets to control it, but they're in the process of subpoenaing PayPal right now over this. So that's absolute the state rampage. Of things, David.
Absolute rampage.
David, one of our favorite sites for a while has been Dune Analytics. Shout this is anybody Dune. Anybody can create a like open source metrics board to gather any on-chain data, and now they are releasing Dune AI. What is this, David?
So this is using large language models like ChatGPT to be able to query and parse Dune's data. And so this is, I think, just making Dune's data much more accessible. We, as plebs, Ryan, are beholden to people like Hill Dobby and Data Always to put Dune boards together for us.
And because they know SQL and we don't. We are non-SQL exactly. plebs.
Exactly. But now we are large language model users, which makes us Dune gods, I guess, yeah. is kind of the idea. And so you can just go to Dune and type in your query, hopefully, and then all of the Dune data that's parsed will be able to spit back out whatever you are looking for.
Like, here's the example. What are weekly ZK sync transaction volumes this year? You can plug that in, you know, just language, just normal human, right. like English language, and then it'll spit back a chart for that. That is pretty right. magical.
So this is actually something that we learned during our travels at Bankless Ventures. I want to parse something out here. There is the data that Dune has parsed and purified and made ready for people to query. And yeah. then there is all of the data on the blockchain.
Yes.
Dune does not have all of the data on the blockchain. Data on the blockchain is like this unrefined, extremely crude like oil that needs to go and be refined so people like Hill Dobby or Data Always and, you know, these Dune wizards can actually
yeah, that's true. Work
together. And it's so true. We are not actually scaling out. There's no new data. Dune doesn't have any new data. The current data that Dune does have parsed is now much more easily queried.
Which is still incredibly powerful, but you can't yeah. do things like how much money did Hamas receive in right. crypto assets? Like, you couldn't right. ask a question, like, it wouldn't be able to answer a question like that.
Right. So Dune still has to manually kind of parse and purify data on the blockchain to be able to present it through its LLM. This is how I understand this.
Yes. Speaking of Bankless Ventures, by the way, David, one of our portfolio companies, Modulus, just announced their raise. And the reason we're including this is, of course, is it presents a future possible conflict of interest and also because we're pretty excited about the Modulus project. So what is Modulus, David?
So Modulus is in the ZKML space, that is zero knowledge machine learning. And so this is a bet that there will be a ton of machine learning models out there. And what can you do with ZK? Like machine model learning models, very big sets of data. Like imagine how big the data is behind ChatGPT. It's like 100 gigabytes. You can ZK that LLM or that machine learning model, and then you produce a proof of that, and then you put that proof on chain. In the world in which there are extremely valuable models out there to use across all different circumstances, it would be really useful to have a proof that you are actually using the correct model and actually being served the correct output of that model. And so this just is, it's like an authentication layer for models and making sure that you're not getting man in the middle attacks if you are a consumer of a model. And so it puts all models into a ZK proof and puts on chain for verification. And then so you can attest that the output of the model that you are paying for or subscribing to or just need for whatever reason is actually using the correct model. And so it's kind of like using Ethereum as like an Ethereum attestation service type of use case. And so there is like the external needs for authenticity. But what's really cool about this, what really got my imagination going, is when the outputs of one ZKML model can also engage with the outputs of another ZKML model natively on-chain. So you can start to think of this as like on-chain ZKML Legos that can be composed together, which gets really interesting when we talk about the world of fully on-chain universes, fully on-chain games, and they need to go out and like query a model as a part of their universe. Like, oh my God, imagine that. And so that's why I'm super stoked about Modulus. Congratulations on Modulus for the raise.
David, what do we have coming up next?
Coming up next, where are all the apps That is a question from one of the members in the Bankless Nation. Ryan and I are going to tell you exactly where all the apps are. We are totally
pressing.
Where are they hiding? Yeah, we're also going to talk about what we're bullish on. So stay tuned for all of that. But first, a moment to talk about these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible.
You know Uniswap. It's the world's largest decentralized exchange with over $1.4 trillion in trading volume. You know this because we talk about it endlessly on Bankless. It's Uniswap, but Uniswap is becoming so much more. Uniswap Labs just released the Uniswap mobile wallet for iOS, the newest, easiest way to trade tokens on the go. With a Uniswap wallet, you can easily create or import a new wallet, buy crypto on any available exchange with your debit card with extremely low fiat on-ramp fees, and you can seamlessly swap on Mainnet, Polygon, Arbitrum, and Optimism. On the Uniswap mobile wallet, you can store and display your beautiful NFTs, and you can also explore Web3 with the in-app search features, market leaderboards, and price charts, or use Wallet Connect to connect to any Web3 application. So you can now go directly to DeFi with the Uniswap mobile wallet. Safe, simple custody from the most trusted team in DeFi. Download the Uniswap wallet today on iOS. There's a link in the show notes. Arbitrum is accelerating the Web3 landscape with a suite of secure Ethereum scaling solutions. Hundreds of projects have already deployed on Arbitrum One with flourishing DeFi and NFT ecosystems. Arbitrum Nova is quickly becoming a Web3 gaming hub, and social dApps like Reddit are also calling Arbitrum home. And now, Arbitrum Orbit allows you to use Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Layer 3, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you are a developer, enterprise, or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum and provide a builder experience that's intuitive, familiar, and fully EVM compatible. Faster transaction speeds and significantly lower gas fees. So visit arbitrum.io where you can join the community, dive into the developer docs, bridge your assets, and start building your first app with Arbitrum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be. Secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free.
Question from Galena this week from the Bankless Nation. Most of the projects highlighted are infrastructure focused, but where are user focused apps that have a true practical application and solve a pain point? Where are they even being built right now? Where are the apps, I think, is the question from Galena. Do you have an answer for that?
Yeah, crypto has been in this like infrastructure phase for like ever. And the application phase is something that I would love to get to. Where are all the apps is kind of like a really good question. We had friend.tech. We had one good one. We need like a lot more. Kind of the big use cases that are definitely successful in crypto are stablecoins and non-sovereign store values. And after that, I don't know if there's really a good term. Like friend tech is like sixth and there's nothing that's three through five. Where are all the apps? We have, I would say in the year 2023, blocks-based supply of block space is no longer an issue. We need the apps. We are in this kind of, we should be having an existential crisis as an industry of just like, yo, we have all the infrastructure, but no one's building anything on the app layer, WTF. That's kind of what I would say is the state of the industry. That's also what I would say is the state of the Solana conference I went to. Like the Solana, what they are delivering as their infrastructure layer is like, I don't know, apparently really crazy. What they're saying they can do is like, oh, that's insane. Like the whole like token 2022 package. Really cool. No apps. No ecosystems got apps.
Yeah, so the way I tee this up and talk about this is, first of all, I'll lay out the concern, right? Because I'm also... It's also been on my mind. I tweeted this earlier this week. I'm no longer worried about the scalability problem for crypto. Now it's the opposite. We have too much block space chasing too few apps. What apps will consume all this cheap block space? I feel like we go in this feast or famine type of phase with crypto, mm-hmm. where actually, if you remember last cycle, we had so much activity that our transactions cost like $30 to right. do something on Ethereum, right? That's like maybe too many apps, not enough block space. Now we have all of this block space. You were just talking about all the cheap Solana block spaces coming down the pike. We have all of this cheap layer two block space too. And it's just getting cheaper. It's getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And it's becoming more and more plentiful. So now we're in the feast portion of things. And the big question is like, what are the apps? And the way I think about this, David, is there's like really two schools of thought. There's like the many app thesis and the few app thesis. I would say the few app thesis, one of the best analysts on this is Plenia. And I would also maybe extend this to Vitalik a little bit, but Plenia basically says, you know what, most of the apps, and this was, I would say, part of the Bankless thesis from 2019 and 2020, Everyone, if you remember the 2017 crypto cycle, we thought we were going to disrupt Uber with a decentralized Uber. Right? That's what people are saying. Like the world computer, we're going to like take over AWS as well. Okay. And I remember part of the refresh for me in 2018, 2019 was being like, what is this crypto thing actually useful for? And the thing I came away with was money, finance, going bankless. And these are still the king apps. It's non-sovereign store of value. So it's like a gold type of object, Bitcoin, let's say, or Ether as a, you know, kind of an internet bond, a non-sovereign store of value. So we got that, check the box. You mentioned stable coins, that's another. DeFi is another, so decentralized finance. I mean, Uniswap overtaking the volume of some of our major exchanges, that's been a clear success. DeFi, Aave, Compound, these things did fine when all of the centralized collateralized loan providers in 2022 faltered. So we do have some wins and we do have some apps, but they're mostly in the finance category. And then NFTs, right? That is like property, it's still an asset. So the apps primarily have come from the finance category of things. And Polenia says that's pretty much the sweet spot for crypto. It's high value, money, financy types of applications. There's not going to be a lot else. So what you should do, crypto, is focus the UX on this niche and get it really good and then onboard the world that way. That, I would say, is the few apps type thesis. Right. And then there's others that are maybe the many app type thesis. I would say, you know, Chris Dixon from A16Z is probably this, like the folks at Variant Fund, Lee Jin, who we had on the podcast earlier, is probably like many app thesis. And they believe a bit more in kind of a on-chain social Web3 type of world where we're going to have a lot of consumption of this block space that we just can't imagine right now. So that would be more along the lines of friends.tech types of things, or even, you know, we were looking at that song.tech, like just things that are new, things that we can't imagine right now. I will say for myself personally, I still think we're in that, that, you know, we're in the famine phase for apps right now, but we're in the feast phase for block space. And so this is where we get to actually test to see how many use cases there are for crypto beyond these kind of simple money cases. I think there'll be more than we expect, but maybe not as much as the Uber bulls who think we're going to put like Uber on chain 2017 think there are. So that's how I'd answer that.
Is it too much to ask for feast? Feast and block space and feast and apps?
No, we never get that. Nothing's ever perfect, David. Not in crypto. You know, one thing I'll add to this is Vitalik wrote a post about this in 2022 that you can go read. He names a few apps. Money. He says that's the first and still the most important app. And then he talks about DeFi, which we named there. Identity, which we really haven't talked about. And that's an up and comer. So ENS, Proof of Humanity, POAPs, Soulbound tokens, that kind of thing. DAOs, maybe they're nascent as well. Right. Again, this is a capital formation structure.
Don't hurt me again.
And that's what he mentions. And by the way, all of those use cases, guess what, David? They were in the Ethereum white paper. That veers more towards Polenia's line of thinking of like it's a few use cases that blockchain and crypto is highly tuned for, very valuable for the world, but it's just not everything.
I'm firmly in the many apps camp.
All right.
I think if you can have a fully on-chain game, fully on-chain universe, a fully on-chain like state machine inside of a state machine, that's like infinity. If you can re-simulate a world, that's infinity apps. That's my take.
In the fullness of time, though.
The fullness of time.
Right?
Yes.
How long does that take to actually play out? It may take a lot longer.
Oh, yeah. Like 10 plus 20 years. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Take of the week, David. This is your take. Okay. It's the only take we got. So give it to us.
This is the only take. This is also what I'm bullish on, but it comes in two parts. Okay.
We're looking at a money ball here. Yeah. What are we looking at?
Money ball. Yeah. So we're looking at a graphic that I put together. This is coming out of a slide for a talk that I'm giving at, Fabric Ventures event in Lisbon here on Monday. One of the reasons why I'm here in Lisbon. So like my hot take here is like we're looking at a circle spectrum with every single color of the universe in it, right? You're like yellow, red, blue. It's like a spectrum, it's a sphere of color spectrums. And around it, I have like disciplines of knowledge, economics, physics, finance, anthropology, political science, sociology, psychology. And like my hot take here is that like money is actually like the space between these disciplines. Like money doesn't just emerge until many other things also emerge. Like other things are the prerequisites to get to money, right? And so
you're saying money as a protocol, money as like a social coordination tool, right? Because
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're not saying money is the center of finance and economics and physics and history and anthropology. You're saying it has
right,
something.
Yeah. So like money is like kind of Gestaltian, as in like you need a few of these things in order to allow for money to emerge. Mm. Right. And so, for example, like economics. Inside of the economics, you have the subjects of like the role of money, the medium of exchange, unit of account, store of value. You have concept of like supply and demand and inflation and deflation. In the physics world, you have the production of money, like hard versus soft money is a function of physics. Mm. Like, why did gold win the Darwinian fight of commodity monies? Well, that answer lies in physics. You have finance, and finance can produce money. Credit is a financial concept. Debits and credits are two kinds of entries into a ledger. That comes from the world of finance. You have anthropology, right? So different cultures have produced different commodity monies and different ledger monies throughout history. And then these cultures collided, and so did their monies. And one money ultimately displaces each other. Political science. When humans invented armies and organized states, the technology of money gained a new property, the central bank. And so that's now money has governance. Then there's sociology, like statehood, money, and society all relate to each other. Now societies vote for governments that makes fiscal and monetary decisions. And these choices are made in mass for all of society. And then there's psychology, because like economic and societal choices are all determined at the margins. Every single choice that you make as an individual is an economic one. Do you buy that coffee in the morning? Do you take the train, an Uber, a personal vehicle? Do you store your savings in Argentine peso or Bitcoin? These choices reverberate through the rest of the system. And so my take is that money is a technology that is at the center of so many other disciplines. And when we were just like cavemen with like stone tools, you don't get any money because you don't have any of the other disciplines that allowed for money to emerge. But money as a technology gets more sophisticated the more knowledge we have.
And another way to maybe interpret this is, in order to understand money, and the reason so few I think understand it, you have to understand a little bit about economics, physics, history, anthropology, political science, sociology, psychology, and finance. Like, no wonder
that's literally the line in my talk. It's like a money 101 talk.
But you know what? The on the flip side, the best way to learn about these disciplines, and the reason why I personally find crypto endlessly fascinating. I mean, like, I know a lot of people are here for kind of like the, you know, just the dopamine hits of watching the price go up. And I'm not going to lie, that's great. You know, like investing is fantastic, and seeing number go up, and that's all great. But the reason I've stayed here is because it's just so intellectual. Like, it's so freaking interesting. Yeah. And it's the best way to learn all of these disciplines as well, because money and a study of crypto will teach you all of these things. The one thing I would add, if you were to say crypto money on top of this, you'd also have to like put cryptography and like technology to surround the circle and round this 100%. Out along with all of those other disciplines, which is why we have endless content to cover on Bankless, my friend. We're never going to run out.
You're looking at a spectrum of Bankless content right here.
Yes. That's right. All right. What are you bullish on, David?
I'm bullish on money, Ryan.
Okay. With the context that you just gave. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think I think people often forget, I think especially in the year 2023 in this industry, like how important money is as one of the functions of crypto. Hmm. Especially as we are going there, where like Janet Yellen just said, oh yeah, we can totally afford two wars.
Yeah,
and sure, Janet Yellen, we can totally afford two wars if we take it out of the money, out of the US dollar. The value comes out of the dollar, which is where people make their savings, which
comes
is where
from the future. It comes
from the future. It comes from people, and then people's individual psychologies are like, well, my dollars are bad now, and so I need to ask for more dollars from my employer so I can live. Mm. And so it reverberates throughout the system, right? And then all of a sudden, if you have a defective money, you have a defective society. And so I'm just having a reminder. It's like, yo, money, if there's one thing that crypto produces that we need it to produce, it's money. And so it's a reminder to be bullish about money. Money is why we're here. If we can fix money, you can fix the world. Tip of the hat to, can't believe I'm saying this, but Saifedean Ammous.
I can't believe you're saying that either. Wow.
Yeah, right.
All right, hold on. I'm finding it. David, while you're saying this, you know, I want to pull up this like absurdist tweet. And this is actually, this is real. So it's only struck me as absurd. This is a headline I saw. Japan to approve $110 billion stimulus package to fight inflation. How does that work?
You don't spend money to fight inflation.
That's exactly what you're talking about, though. Mm-hmm. An understanding of money will make this pretty obvious. Oh, our friend Preston Pish there, because we need more made up money to have less money.
See, Bitcoiners understand money. They don't understand Bitcoin, but they understand money.
Wow. You made a lot of people mad right there. Yeah. All right. Uh-huh. Ask me, David. Ask me.
I will, Ryan. What are you bullish on?
You know what's on that theme? I'm bullish on Ether as money. Okay. In particular, I just want to say, you were talking about, obviously, a lot of tokens have had big pumps here lately. I am not surprised Solana had such a monumental pump. I think it was kind of like it's off massive lows, you know, 97% right. down. But I think
for context, it's back up to its pre-FTX, right before FTX.
Yes. Collapsed. What I think people are doing now, though, is they're forgetting about Ether. Okay, they're starting to fade Ether.
Ether isn't cool anymore.
It's not cool anymore because it hasn't pumped the way Sol has over the last 30 days. So I'm hearing even like some seasoned ETH people starting to like worry, maybe starting to like wonder, did I miss something? I'm not saying anyone that listens to Bankless is like this, but my message is this:
Oh, good day.
You guys are too bearish on ETH right now. Okay, if you are one of those people. Because look at the landscape. There's a bunch of execution layers out there. There's layer twos. I consider Solana an execution layer. Mm-hmm. Take your pick. There's only one settlement layer, and that's Ethereum. Do you know how I know this? Because Ethereum is the only chain that has other chains that settle on top of it.
Right.
Ethereum is the only chain that from 2019, okay, to this year, 2023, went from about 19 million annually in blockchain sales to like 1.2 billion in annualized blockchain sales. It is the only chain that is producing profitable block space. Okay. That makes it a settlement layer. And I think that is the market is not appreciating that right now. I think the market is doing some narrative type trading, and that's fine. You know, that's going to happen. But I feel like too many people are fading ETH. And you know who agrees with me? His previous Bankless guest, Chao Wang. He says this, hilarious that ETH is now the most hated asset in crypto, and yet ETH has objectively the largest dev community, arguably better long-term security than Bitcoin. For most retail, if they could only own one crypto asset as part of the concentrated portfolio, it would be ETH. That's still my take, man. Whenever someone asks me, I'm like, ETH.
Yeah, I saw the Bitcoin plus Solana barbell case, and I'm like, where have I heard this before?
Well, tell people. Some people missed it. Where have we heard that before?
You know, it was like DeFi summer. It was after like 9 months of DeFi tokens of absolutely mooning in price. Bitcoin was mooning in price, and Ether wasn't doing anything. And they were like, Bitcoin and DeFi tokens, these are the barbells. You're like, why do you need Ether? It's all you need. Now people are doing like, it's Bitcoin for the money, because they know they in the back of their head, they're like, yeah, Bitcoin for the money, Solana for the tech. And to me, like Solana people mostly know their shit. If you're going to say that Bitcoin is the money, to me, it just reveals your bias, because we know Bitcoin is broken money, and they know it too. And they're just saying like, no, just no Ethereum, just Bitcoin and Sol. It's all you need. Like to me, it just reveals the cards.
I'm just
pull up one more tweet while we continue
you can.
This conversation.
You can. Yeah, we're ranting. It's our show. We can do what we want. What's your tweet?
Okay, you want to read this one first?
Yeah, this is someone by the name of Maddie. Describe rollups, but leave out the typical jargon. No Ethereum, you can't say layer two, you can't say scaling, or you can't say multisig.
So the answer that I gave for this is, what is a rollup? It is a ledger contained inside of a single line of a larger ledger. What, Ryan, is a settlement layer?
Yeah.
It's the one that isn't contained ledgers. By any other larger ledger. Yeah.
It's the king ledger. It's the ledger. Substrate.
It's the final settlement layer. Right.
Yeah.
Which is ETH.
Well, until there are other chains that are settling other ledgers,
right.
I think Ether has an incredibly strong value proposition. I'm not worried at all about these recent moves. Feeling quite comfy. David, let's get to the meme of the week.
This is an old meme, kind of checked out. It is two people. It's a guy and a girl, and the guy is doing the hand heart thing where he like the girl matches the heart, and the girl just got like a thumbs up.
This man and has the girl, been
the girl is, you know, thumbs up is yeah. Sam Bankman Fried, and the guy trying to do the heart is FTX depositors. They're not getting it.
Can this be our last Sam Bankman-Fried meme ever? As soon as
he's so memeable. He's so memeable.
Yeah, you're right.
I can't guarantee that.
We can't commit to that. Well, there you go, Bankless Nation. Thanks for staying tuned. This has been The Roll-Up. And with some disclosures and then risks in a minute. Bankless Ventures, of course, invested in Modulus. We told you about that earlier. I'm an angel investor in Dune Analytics as well. Both David and I are long-term ETH holders. We also hold Bitcoin, other assets. You can always view our disclosures at bankless.com/disclosures. Let me end with this, as I do. You got to know that crypto is risky. You could definitely lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.
And please enjoy this moment of zen from Kyla Scanlon, who in this Zoomer fashion way explains the Federal Reserve.
Hey there, Fed Chair Jerome Powell. I have no surprises for you today, except for my tie is silver and I'm not wearing glasses. So we have pause. Rates are unchanged. This is because the economy is an economy. It is doing what it does. Inflation is somewhat cooling. The labor market, somewhat cooling. The bond market, freaking out. So that did our job for us a little bit. Tighter financial and credit conditions, basically a couple rate hikes. We have maintained optionality by taking a break, by saying, hey, maybe we'll date again soon. We don't think that the rise in long-term bond yields is because of policy rates. Hey, nobody really knows, just like nobody knows if you're doing well or great. Recession not in the forecast, rate steady, economy zooming thanks to you. Can you keep doing it? Can you keep spending lots of money on things? So we will keep that door open and maintain optionality and call you back a couple times a week to say, hey, because there are a lot of things going on. Have to ask, is inflation cooling? Ask, is the market happy? Can that rock keep rolling up that hill?